Daniel Perek Vav. So we've reached the end of the Malchut Belshazzar and move on, although it will see that when we move on to the next part of the book where we go into the visions of Daniel, we then leave the historical part of the book and we go back into the period that happened before, because really these visions take place across the entire period of the book. But the first part of the book is the historical book. It discusses the things that happen in third person, so it's from the outside. The rest of the book is first person. And so this is the closing part of this historical book. V'dariyavesh mada'a kabel malchuta kebarshnin shitin v'tartin. Dariyavesh the Mede, he became the king when he was about 62 years old. What is the meaning of that? I mean, who really cares that we have to know precisely how old he was? So Rashi brings over him the Sigarela. If you count back 62 years, it turns out that at the time that Nebuchadnezzar had gone in to the Beit HaMikdash at the time of Yoyachin, it was exactly 62 years earlier. It was at that moment that the one who was destined to destroy the Malchut of Nebuchadnezzar and his children was born. So that, as we mentioned earlier, that was Dariyavesh. That Dariyavesh, he became now the head of the guards, and in the end was the one that not only knocked off Belshazzar, but took away the Malchut completely. Now, the mice of this entire period, the Belshazzar, Dariyavesh, the relationship Bichlal to Modai is a big riddle to historians. And for many years, Belshazzar was assumed to be one of these made-up Bible stories. Until, of course, they found a cylinder that gave the detailed information about Belshazzar's name had never shown up before. This happens all the time. Half of the kings of Ashur didn't exist, according to the biblical archaeologists, until the entire palaces were found, and steels were found, all the details were found. So it's very difficult to know precisely what's going on. There are no indications in history outside of Sefer Daniel and places in the other Nevi'im that Modai was a Malchus that was in any way the Kofshim of Bovel at this time. There's even those who doubt that Modai exists, although we find references to the Modai, we find references back at the time of Ashur, because Lamaisa, Modai did get into fights with Ashur very early on. So there was a constant battle with Ashur. The problem is that Koresh seems to have come on the scene before, really, there was anything chashuv about Modai taking over in Bavel directly. And there's a whole historical idea that this Dariyavesh, they got mixed up with the Dariyavesh, who was the one that was part of Poras. Of course, that's the Dariyavesh that ends up building the Beis HaMikdash, who, according to our history, is the child of... No connection at all. There were two Achashveroshes, two Dariyavishes. It's a very... The whole period is Luta B'Choshek. It's very, very unclear what is happening over here. However, what does show up is that Koresh was a son-in-law to a gentleman called Dariyavesh. And that's mentioned it's mentioned in other sources. That Chazal seem to take for granted that they were related. And in fact, history attests to Koresh having a wife who's from Moda. So in other words, it means that his father-in-law may be, the way Chazal learned it, was Dariyavesh. So then his mother was also from Modai. So the question of exactly who Modai is and where Modai extends and so on, that's already a big historical riddle. But there seems, whether it was a distinct political entity, whether it was an empire on its own, there definitely was a group of people called the Mandoim who used to fight Ashur at the same time that Bavel was getting into position before Koresh. So it could very well be, since according to Chazal, Dariyavesh was only Melech for 1 year, really. This was the year that was meant to be the year of Belshazzar, because that's the mana and the takal that you were found to be missing in the takal. Then what would have been if you wouldn't have found to be missing? We would have extended the Malchus Bavel for those years. That's the way the Malmum understands there were Shani Mekutot, and the Malchus Bavel would have actually ended at the time. It's supposed to be the time for Koresh. So this is like sort of an extension that year of something that could have been Bavel. So again, it could very well be that this was part of the Kiyum of the Vias that we had seen earlier, the Parsin, was that there's going to be a Chaluk of the Malchus. And that Chaluk of the Malchus could have been between a father-in-law and a son-in-law. So that there was as a matter of fact, there's a Medrash that records a discussion between Dariyavesh and Koresh in which they based the decision on the Malchus on the Nevi'ahs of Nebuchadnezzar, having seen that Nevi'ahs, that it was supposed to be split between Madai and Paras. So therefore they decided that that's the way they'll do it, so that since he said first Madai and then Paras, so, and this, by the way, is consistent throughout Daniel, it's Madai and Paras, even though it's Paras and Madai, all throughout Megillas Esther. Because in Megillas Esther was the time in the Paras, and then Madai was second there. And this time, the beginnings was indeed the time of Madai. So the transition had relationship to Madai. Again, it's not clear what the concept of Malchus is over here. It could very well be a cultural concept, civilization concept, as opposed to an actual, the political Hashivas was clearly in terms of this person, Dariush. But in any event, this Dariush was 62 years old, which brings him all the way back to the beginning. And of course, this is once again a closure element of Bavel, because if, according to Chazal, we trace this moment back to Nebuchadnezzar trespassing in the Beit HaMikdash, which Lamaise hasn't mentioned anywhere. It doesn't say, it says that he sent from his own place, he sent messengers to the Mashmah didn't come. Okay, but it could be, according to the manager study afterwards, that's the whole story, where Yoyachin threw the keys up to the Beis HaMikdash. He said, you don't want them, you don't want us to be Shomrim for the Beis HaMikdash. Whereas the hand came down, took those keys, according to some, it was thrown up, never came back down again. So maybe at that point, he saw that they had given up, so that he maybe did come. But in any event, this is how Rashi brings the reason for the over here the Shittin Matartin Shnim. And we immediately... This is not the Yoyachin. This is from the time of Yoyachin, 62 years. Shvar Kodem Daryovich. And immediately we begin reading of exactly what the remez was in Daniel's vision, in his interpretation of the vision of Nebuchadnezzar, in which the gradual, what Nebuchadnezzar saw is a decline of Malchut, in which first there was the head that was made out of Zahav, in which everything came from a centralized brain. And that was Nebuchadnezzar. That's reference to the gold. The first thing that we find at the end of Malchus Bavel is a decentralization of control, which means that it's the first step towards Daniel's vision of a Malchus that actually emerges from the population. So here, for the first time, it was found favor in Daryovish's eyes. Ve'kim al Malchuta la'achar shtabnaya ma'avesrin dilahavon b'chol Malchuta. He appointed 100, a house of representatives, 120 representatives that were in charge, each one representing a different province. And it's here that the Chazal bring a raya that Daryovish was not the same level of Melech. It wasn't Melech Bekipa, because not that much later, the time of Ahasuerus was 127. So apparently there were 7 areas that he had not conquered, because that wasn't viewed as having completely been Sholeit. The empire wasn't complete. And in any event, though, the idea of a year was that he removed himself from direct personal control. Not only that, but remarkably, what we're about to see is a story of an amazing transition between power that's vested in an individual and power that is vested in law. And that law is more important than the king. Now, this, of course, comes out very strongly in Megillas Esther, where the king says there's nothing we can do because whatever was written and signed by the king, it's impossible to change. What do you mean? You're the king. So that means that there was already a constitution in which the king was not able to do whatever it is that he wanted. This first time that we find this is here in this parak, and this to Nebuchadnezzar was the ultimate disaster. Exactly, we talked about the king and I. Exactly the same story. The king had, exactly, Magna Carta. It wasn't the first. So that the idea of this vision that his son is going to be keeping a law and that he's going to be dependent on something that is higher than the king was horrifying to him. Until B'Shas Meisa, he was ready to be Makaba, but he couldn't live to see it. This is very much the story of the golden head that now is reduced to the silver torso that is now actually dependent on less centralized power and is part of an overall Malchus. The Alamin Hon, now he had on top of them, what do they call the Russian, the Troika. He had a Troika that was in charge of the 120. Didn't last too long in Russia, actually. But he had now 3 people, Sarkhin Talata. So these Sarkhin, Reb Sadi Gaon is Betargim, Sarkhin is Vizia. So it's the Muslim, the Turkish, the vizier. So, okay, but there were 3 grand over them three grand chashuvim, and Daniel was one of them. So actually, what happened was that the one-third of the malchus that had been given in the dying moments of Belshazzar actually ended up in Mikuyam. Because later, at the time of Daryavesh, they maintained the one-third that should be the malchus of Daniel. And Talata, one of these three sarchim, the Daniel Chabino, of whom Daniel was one, Ilai Havana Chashdar B'naya Ilain, Yavilon Ta'ama U'magalo Lavinazim. So that these lower representatives of Rabbi Achashdar Pnim that we find in Megillat Esther, these should be reporting to them, and that way the king will be protected by various levels of bureaucracy and government between him, to make sure that there's no damages that are done to the taxes, or to the law structure, and so on. Adayin Daniel Danav Natsach al Sarchayav al Chashta Benaya. And so, in fact, what happened is that Daniel gradually became the most powerful of all of these. So he was leading over the two, ended up being the most mechubad, and so all the Achashta Benim were completely dependent on him. Kol kabel de ruach itirabe, in light of the fact that he had this very special spirit, and it got to the point where the malka was ashit la kamuta akom malchuta. The king now was trying to figure out ways in his heart to turn him into the actual Yosef character, in which the entire Malchut would be taken directly from him, and he wouldn't be a member of Troika. Now, of course, they picked up on that and were not very happy with that idea. And therefore, at that point, Sarchaya v'Acharshta Benaya, so these Sarim, the three Sarachim, the other two, and the Acharshta Benim, decided to look for a way to destroy Daniel. Shehavu ba'ayan ila lashkachalu Daniel mitzad Malchuta. They got to work finding some kind of ilah is an interesting word, because ilah relates quite a lot to alilah. So alilah dam, find some kind of reason. But ilah is also cause. So it's the cause of a thing. An alilah is a way in which to use causes against somebody. So in other words, it's a presentation of things in a fashion that causes them damage, where it might be based on certain things, but I'm going to present it in a way to create alilat dvarim.
Flotilla incident.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll find a way, mitzad malchuta, from inside of his functionality within the government, in which perhaps he diverted some funds somewhere, or wasn't completely loyal to the king, and they did whatever they could. They had private detectives working on this, and some the chol ilo shechita lo yachli mashkacha. They could not find anything. I hear, even though there's a machloket about the first word ilah, whether it means alilah, whether it means a sibah, so to speak. Here, definitely, it's called ilah. There was no possible basis, the sense of a fault. There was no fault on him, and there was absolutely no corruption. So they couldn't get him on anything. It was a disaster. It was clean as a whistle. This was terrible. And well, it didn't, of course. So they couldn't find anything on him. In light of the fact that the man was completely neman, exactly the words, again, that he's with Yosef, we pointed out, throughout the connections of the Neil to Yosef. And it was impossible to find any type of error that he had ever made. And certainly there was nothing that he had done that was in any way corruption. So they came up with a better idea. Dain Guvraya Ilay Chamrin. So then they said to themselves, I will never find anything on this guy. There's only one thing we can do. The only thing to do is to get him on his religion. We can't get him in terms of the malchut, which is what we first started to do. What we need to do is to put him in a position where it boils down to his loyalty to God or to king. And that's where we know where his loyalties are going to lie, and that's where we can get him. So I came up with a plan. The plan was, according to the Medrash, the plan was to utilize Daryavish's own new Malchut over here, in which everybody still looked at him, and they said to him, you realize that everybody thinks that you're just a continuation of Bava. Nobody even looks at you as being anything but just the neophyte in the Babylonian Empire. Nobody thinks that you're a king in any real way. We'd like to put you on more of a pedestal. So they came up, therefore, with this plan, of course, completely for the sake of the establishment of the value of the throne of Daryavesh. So Sarchaya v'Achashdabnaya Ilein Hardishu al Malka, they went up there and made a tumult with the king. That's very interesting. The Rashi uses the word Hargishu in the way you use the word in English, felt out. They felt out the king to see whether there was a way that they'd be able to get in. That's a little difficult later on in the story because the word there is used again the way that it's used in the Gemara. Rokish alikuli alma means everybody gathered by the tumult. So it means tumult. But I mean, it can work later too. We'll see. Anyway, so they felt out the king and they went in there with a tumult, made a tumult in front of the king. This is what they said to him. They said to him, Dariavish Malka, La'amin Chayi, may you live forever. We, of course, are worried about the fact that you don't have your rightful position in history. It yatu kol sorche malchuta. Of course, here they represented themselves as being all of this, despite the fact that the Neo wasn't there. They're claiming that we've all met together, and this is our unanimous decision. All of the Sarachim, all of the vice Sarachim, the Harshtarpanaya, the Hadabraya, the Pachvata, local governors, the mayors, we've gotten together because we're so worried about you. And what we want to do is the Kayama Kiyam Malka. We want to strengthen your position. Ulatakafa Esar, and we want to give your proclamations. We want you to issue a proclamation that's going to put you into a position of absolute power for 30 days just to get things started. And that is that you issue the following law. The kol diyiv evau, min kol elah ve'enash. Adium in Latin, la'en minach malka, yitramelego arivata. Anybody who has any request of any god or human, for the next 30 days that doesn't present it to you, then he's to be thrown out into a lion's den. Because after all, the lion, as we've seen, is always the symbol of malchut. That was that's what we call Aryoch in Babel, and that was the symbol of Babel. They had all over the walls, you can still see today, the engravings of the lions. It was just like we had the lion eating or attacking anybody who was connected Malchus Yor. We found this in the Vim Rishonim. So here too, they wanted to use the Aryeh as a sign that if he doesn't accept the Aryoch, so to speak, of the power of your Malchut, then he should be eaten by lions. Well, this sounded pretty good, especially since they didn't say anything about the Neo. But just in case he would ask, they pressed. It's got to be done right away. Ki'an means right now. Immediately. Malka, Tekime, Sara, Viteshum, Ketav, look, all of us are here. We want to see this done. We know what an honor of you are. You're not going to want to do this. So we want it to be done now. Dilola Hashnaya, and once, of course, you do it, it can never be changed. Kedat Madaivu Paras, here it's not Parasu Madai, here it's Kedat Madaivu Paras, as the laws of Madaya Paras indicate, they can never go out of fashion. This means that they actually, even though you may be the source of the law and your proclamation, that's all we need is for special interests to be able to go after you issue a proclamation and have it changed. It makes a lot of sense. You're dependent on the law just like anybody else. If this is serious, it has to bind you. And that's what we want. We want to indicate how harsh of your law is. Well, sounded very good to him. Kol kabel dana, and so is against this entire assembly. Malka Daryavish Risham Kitava Vyasara. Indeed, he went out and he signed the decree. Now, Daniel, Daniel indeed knew that this law had been proclamated. And so instead of going to Shul, which was a little dangerous, because they would say he was asking things of God, Alavete, he went into his house to daven at home. V'chavin p'tichan le be'elita neged Yerushalayim. He had windows that were open in his second story, Aliyah, facing Yerushalayim. Zinin t'lata b'yoma, three times a day. Ubarech al berchoi. He would get down on his knees. Umtzalei umodem. And he would pray. And he would be modest. Apparently is a reference. Betzalei is a reference to the Shalosh Rishonos. And modest is a reference to the Achreinos. It was a Zinin to be masker the Shevach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And to be modest HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kodem Elaha, in front of God. Kol kabel diavad min kadmat dina, just as he used to do before. So now Chazal view this is very, very meaningful because first of all, we learn out halachas from here. One of the halachas we learn from here is that you're supposed to have a window in a room that you daven, which of course is the reason that all the new shuls are in miklatim. I didn't quite follow. No. And furthermore, we learn out, and the idea over here is not air conditioning. Although according to one sheet, that is that it should be nice and pleasant. And I've never seen a mikvah that's nice and pleasant even with everything. But one of the reasons I don't have it in the Ramban. But in any event, there's many different reasons. So, and the Mefarshim bring many reasons for the rule. One of them is to be able to see the sky. After all, Kadosh Baruch Hu was kaveh ma'aseh bereishis, v'yikra Elokim l'rakia shamayim, which means that the rakia, the sky, the local sky, was given the name shamayim because it becomes now that which enables us to relate to the shamayim. So it's a metaphorical shamayim, and it's more a person. And because of that, it's able, you're able to be mechavim. Another meaning is that you don't really sense the kivun at all, where you're facing. If you're supposed to face Yerushalayim, you're supposed to face Yerushalayim, not inside some kind of closed chamber where it's completely irrelevant where which direction you face. So over here, if you're open to the outside, then your direction is meaningful in terms of it, the way it is that you're facing clapping the sun. In any event, this halacha is learned from him. Furthermore, you see from here that it says this is what he used to do before, which means from what we learn out, that you shouldn't think that the tefillahs were there only to take the place of the karbonos, because he used to do this all the time. That means that even before he was taken from Yerushalayim, Kodmadina, he always used to daven in this fashion. So there apparently were already inyanim of tefillah. Precisely what these inyanim were, actually the Malbim suggests that he had no intention of doing anything against the king. He just didn't want to get involved. But Lamaisa, he wasn't asking for anything. He was being Meshabeach, what it says, Betzali Umode. He was being Meshabeach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Meida in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And never intended to do anything that was against. But how is he going to prove? What is he saying? What, are they going to give them the Nusach of his Tefillah? They're going to listen to him. He figured, okay, I'll stay at home. Later on, it's Mashma that certainly at one point, he decided to be Meister Nefesh totally for this thing. Now, this becomes la halacha also, major, major question. Because there was no need to be Meister Nefesh. The king did not make a gzeira over here against Avedas Hashem. It was letovato lanato. If a king makes a gzeira that is lanato, you don't have to be Meister Nefesh unless it means the involvement in Avedas Argilei Arayas Hashvichas Domi, which none of this is. So then the question is, according to the Rambam, it's also to be Meister Nefesh. So why is it, if you learn that he meant to do what he did, and later on we'll see that when the situation got touchier, seems to be that he went out of his way to show that he wasn't paying any attention to this whole business. So that becomes a big machlokes, whether we have a right to learn out from here, that if somebody wants Bedafka to be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim and feels that it's going to make an impact, whether he has a right to do so. And there's certain situations where the Rambam's Isser, if he does something that gets himself into trouble, that then he's Mishayev Benafshay, whether that's a blanket Isser under any old circumstances. Are there times when that's okay? But what is definitely fascinating is the question of the relationship to king and country for the first time, not in a sense of direct Avodah Zarah. So back in the earlier, where Hanani, Mishal, Azariah, they're Mevazeh Nevuchadnezzar. When it comes to Avodah Zarah, you're no king. And this whole business of divine kings and so on, we think is a bunch of garbage. But over here, he wasn't asking for Avodah Zarah. So many learned that when he said it has to be presented to him, he didn't mean that he could grant what the gods would grant. He would be the intermediary. So since there should be an Adam Choshev, and that Adam Choshev is ultimately the king of the entire earth, of Malchus Badai Baras, so it's only right to show that at least for the first 30 days, that the Chinuch of the Malchus will do it this way. And that way everyone will understand that really, even though they pray directly to God after 30 days, but it's really a thing that the king has given them the right to do, and that everything should have gone to the king. So the question is, the chashivas over here of the nature of Aveda Shamayim, and we'll find that that is a theme throughout this parak, both in the words of the king and in the actual events that take place. There's a new concept of Aveda. And remember that the transition between the Zman of the Beis HaMikdash and the Churban and the coming second Beis HaMikdash was part of the central idea of that transition, was that a Beis HaMikdash is not the only way to do Aveda, and is not the only way to be Eimed Bifnei Hashchina. And in fact, the Yud Ches Broches were all part of the Takona of initially Anshei Knesset HaGedola, the idea of Shalosh Tefillos Beyom is a question, even if it was based on the Minhag of the Avos, or even if it was connected to all kinds of Machlokes. What exactly is Machlokes in the Gemara? Is it the Avos Tiklum? Is it connected to the Karbonos that they were Tiklum? And Meir was connected to the Emurim that were Nisrafim and the Lila. But many learned that that's all part of one whole issue called Avodah. in which elements that the Avos did, but were not Mechayev everybody, it wasn't necessarily Takona Nishah, matched up with the Tamidim Umusaf, and then became, after the Churban of the Beis Hamikdash, an actual Chiyev. And then at a later date, they actually gave over with the 120 Zakenim, as the Gemara describes. They worked out the whole Seder of the Brachas and so on. But this becomes part of that transition itself. And this book being written by the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah is clearly the first stage in which they're giving over the elements of this transition. And therefore, the interaction over here between Daniel and Daryovish, when it comes specifically to Tefillah and the Chashivas of Tefillah, is a remarkable one. Some even compare the story in Maseches Brachas, which occurs in a few places, with the Chosid that was davening, and the Roman came, and he didn't stop davening. And the guy says to him afterwards, it was a policeman, he says, "You idiot. I could have knocked you off. You think I would even have had to give an explanation of why I knocked you off? What's the matter with you?" So he says, let me cool off a minute while I address your questions. All right, tell me. So if you were talking to the king, and if somebody walked by and said, "Hi, Joe," would you say hi? Says, "Of course not." And if you would, what would happen? What do you mean? They would have hung me up. Says, exactly. I'm speaking to Malach Malchi, I'm Lachi. You're very chashiv, but what am I going to, if a king comes along, I'm going to answer him when I'm speaking to Malach Malchi, I'm Lachi. So where did you get the right to do that? Also from this idea, that's brought in a medrash that they really learned it from here, Kemay Deisa, Daniel, that Daniel was Meisr Nefesh. He wanted to show the Kvod Shamayim as being that which is underlying all covet. That, of course, was part of the vision all along. This is what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. What happens to Belshazzar? What happens to the statue? The idea is that there is an ilah that he gives the right to Malchus to Basar Adam. So even if you're not telling me something about Avodah Zarah, but you're destroying the nature of Malchus. And that whole idea, as Rabbi Yitzhak mentioned earlier, the question of Keitzetz Benetiyes, is a destruction of Malchus to the point where it becomes Minus by definition. And in the end, is worse than Avodah Zarah. I mean, it's more harsher than Avodah Zarah in terms of its destructive aspects. And so therefore, Daniel, either according to some, did this on purpose. According to others, he wasn't aware of the fact that they were laying in wait for him. According to others, he didn't think he was doing anything wrong with Chalali, but they were laying in wait for him. It isn't clear at the beginning of the story what happened. But he seemed to be trying to stay out of trouble. And there he is on his knees, by the way. Why don't we pray on our knees? Right? We find Shlomo Davened on his knees, Daniel Davened on his knees, and one time stocks. So Peskin during the Middle Ages say we've stopped doing that because of the Goya, because of the Christians. The non-Jews basically all daven on their knees in this fashion. It became, not only that, there's a halacha that you're supposed to daven Shemoneh Esrei with your hands cupped over your chest. Well, that also became a Christian minute. So once that became, then we stopped davening the way they daven. Interesting. Okay, but in any event, at that time, this was the beginning of davening. This is our first sense of an alternative presence of the Shekhinah. It doesn't require a Beis HaMikdash. That's why it's so important. And it's the direct chibur, as if you have a straight line of vision from the window, wherever you are, straight to you. These are things we never heard of before. So, and here's that taken for granted. This is the way he was doing it. Obviously, this is the path of survival. This is the same Daniel who gave us the other inyan of survival, of keeping away from the Pas Akum, the Shemen Akum, whatever it was that he was gazer. Sorry?
Don't you have to have Bakashas in Yitzhila? He left out Bakashas?
Not Meikra. This is the Malbim's approach. We'll see later on that it seems very clear that that's what they grabbed him about, that he was being Mitchanein. Mitchanein is begging a man. Ein lecha Bakasha, garam izeh, unless it's a lie. So Adayin, Guvraya, Ilech, and then at that point, they had been laying in wait for him. So Hargishu, here the Hargishu, so it doesn't seem to mean they felt it out. Hargishu means they were waiting to jump out. But that could be the other sense of Hargishu. When you lay an ambush for a guy, you're triggered by something. So when you feel that it's time, that's when you jump out. So the two explanations of Hargishu here sort of become one. So they jump out, Vashkachu leDaniel, there they find Daniel, Boyu mitchanim kadamelaha, he is begging and asking in front of God. There you go. He was called, says the Medrash, Shocher. This is what Shlomo Melech was referring to when he said Shocher Tov Yevakesh Ratzon. That a person who is Shocher, he begs HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is found for him Yevakesh Ratzon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to his needs, as we'll see.
They broke into his house?
The Medrash says that they had one of the workers in the house, a nar, hiding there behind the curtains, and that when he saw this, that he called them in and let them in. Okay, so at that moment, in front of his gods, so they go in, sort of tamavat to the king. excuse me, king. I just wanted to discuss that little law that you had passed. You say something about that. There's supposed to be this law that anybody that asks from any god or man for the next 30 days, was he supposed to be thrown to the lion's den? Absolutely, yes, indeed, yes, even Milta, that is exactly what I said. And, of course, nothing to do about it, really very sorry. That can't be changed. Really? Well, they said, how amazing that is, because that Daniel fellow, that Jew that had been brought up here with the Jewish Galut, he doesn't seem to give a hang about your little gezeras, you know? This is the same language we had before, which with Machlokas, I don't understand it. Lo sam alach malka ta'im, which the way we explained it before was the idea, he does not put you, king, in his cheshbon. That's because the word alach implies that it's on you, not about. The other way that everybody else tries to learn it is does not take your gezeiras, but then alach doesn't make sense if you say that. So this is a very nice shot. So he doesn't give any ta'im. He doesn't give any thought, doesn't give any worries about you, king. The al esaradi rasham, the laws that you promulgated, he just simply tramples over. And you wouldn't believe this, but zimnin tlata biyuma baibo, three times a day he does this. Just as a matter of course. And the king, of course, realized that he's been trapped. Then Malka, gedimilta shama, when the king heard that, sagi bai shaloi. That was very, very bad news to him. And he decided there's got to be a way to get out of this mess. Real Daniel, son Baal Shezavute. And so he decided to put his mind to it. I mean, son Baal is Baal is Lev, they say Baal is Bilo, Vahaloch, which is Bilo means to buy him out, to ransom him. Somehow or other, he was going to get him out of this. The Shezavute to save him. The Ad Malay Shimshin, this, he was working on it until Mincha. Problem was, when it came Mincha, Daniel was sitting over there, excuse me, I gotta get up. So he walks off into the other room and starts dominating Mincha. Oh my God, what am I gonna do now? So at that point, he was up until then, having Mishtadilat Salute, he was doing his best to save Daniel. So you're already at Smash, but he wasn't gonna put up with it. Okay, there's some who say, even at this point, that he was trying to go off on the side, they wouldn't realize it. My God, you know, not exactly the best place to daven mincha while you're on trial for davening shachris. So, Beidayin Guvraya Ilei Chargisho Amalka, then they ran it again. They said, look, this is crazy. You know, I don't know what you're trying to do, but there's no way that you can change any of those laws. And we know what you're trying to do. You're trying to claim that the law only covered specific requests, and he wasn't giving specific requests. You got all kinds of perushim. But you forget that the idea of law in Madai Vaparas is no perushim. To call down, you seem to have forgotten Da Malka, the Datla Madai Vaparas, is to call a Sarvakayam de Malka Yakim Lola Hashnaya. That does not allow any tampering. And I don't know, well, you're still trying to tamper. Nah, he saw he was defeated. So Bedayin Malka Amar, and so he had to decide and issued the decree, Vaitiv le Daniel, and so they picked up Daniel, Uramulagu Badari Avata, threw him into the lion's den. And the king said, Ana Malka Viamar le Daniel, don't worry about a thing. Elahach di ant palach le betadira, the God that you always do Aveda for. Who you shaves Vinach, he'll take good care of you. I tried my best. Now, it's very interesting because Chazal learned not from here. What did you have to say, Palachle Bitadira? Bitadira means all the time. There's such a thing as continuous Aveda. What would that be? It's interesting that the pasuk says, "Ace tzedakah b'chol ace." The Gemara asks, "What could that be? How can a person do tzedakah all the time?" So one shot is zamegadlu yosem b'toch beisa. Somebody who takes in the homeless into his house, who takes in an orphan into his house, it's constant tzedakah. It's always involved. And so that's what the Neil used to do. The Neil used to be tremendously Isaac at Tzarchitzi. We're taking care of anyone who would need it. So that's what the king was referring to, not the actual tefillah. He says, I know what kind of person you are, that your whole life revolves around Aved HaShemayim. And again, this is an extension of the idea. What do you think? That the only things that you have and the only mitzvahs you have are mitzvahs that are nageya bedavka, specific ways in which God tells you to do this at this hour and this at that hour. There's things to do even if you're in Bovo and Modai and Poros and probably even in Borough Park, where some people found things to do. And over there, it's possible to do Aved HaShemayim. Now, he didn't trust the guys that had got. He understood what happened now. And so he wanted to make sure that they wouldn't go in there and knock off Daniel if the lions didn't knock him off. Of course, they didn't trust him either. They wanted to make sure that he didn't figure out some way of releasing Daniel. And so they tie it Evan Chada Vesumat Apum Guba. And so they took this gigantic stone. The point is that Vehitayit does not mean they took. Vehitayit means it took itself. So indeed, Medrash says, there are no stones in Bava. That's why they need to use bricks. Because they didn't have stone. It was all sandy. Where would they get stone from? Vehitayit, a stone, appeared. So this stone now flew from Eretz Yisrael to be put on top of the Gova Arayot. And at that point, there's another Mandi Yomar says, a lion. A malach came and turned himself into a lion of stone that sat on top of the bear to make sure that nobody would fool around with it. And so that was put on top. The king put his stamp on that in wax, so it couldn't be moved in that way. There's no way that they could have killed him. Of course, they had to put their stamp to make sure that he wouldn't get them out. Ubi is kat rav ravanoi. So now the noblemen, they also put their stamp of approval, so to speak, on this. And because of that, in order that nobody should change their minds about what's happening to Daniel. The king was devastated. The king goes back to his palace, Ubatavat, poor Daryavesh, goes to sleep hungry. V'dachavan lohan el kadamoyis table. Was not presented in front of somebody. Dachavan has the music. He didn't have his music on. He even turned off his iPod that night. And because of that, he couldn't get to sleep. Vishinte nida talui, and his sleep escaped him. And there he was, tossing and turning the entire night long until tomorrow's exciting episode. Another meaning of ubat tavat is that some learn that it means not hungry, but lashon of tavig, which is actually food, but it's roasting, meaning he was absolutely furious. And therefore, because of that, he couldn't sleep because he was just so agitated. And so the dain malka, so at that point, the king just finally gave up on trying to get to sleep when it was bishbar para. Yekum benagan. So there it was by alot hashachar early on, and he would decide he's getting up while it's still dark. He's going to go over to see whether Daniel made it or not. You'll notice, I don't know if you have but in the Masorah, there's a small opening pay and a larger closing pay, which the Minchashai brings as part of the Masorah. And he just gives a very cute shot. Two pez of Daryovish. He started with trying to save, and you know, as Yoda says, don't try, do. But he was, you know, he didn't have the mouth to deal with that. But when it came time to give the tzivoy to throw him into the Govariot, then he had a very big mouth indeed. Anyway, he gets up in the morning, and ubidba la lagubadari of batazal. And there he went, rushed and terrified to see what was the result of the horrible Govariot. And as he got close to that Govarayot, the steep pit where the Arayot were kept, in a very sad voice he cries out, Hanei Malkan proclaims, V'amar Daniel, Daniel, Avei Delaha Chaya, O servant of the living God, I'm hoping. Elahach dian plachle bitadira hayachalish sezavutach menaryavata. That God for whom you always serve, has he been able indeed to save you from the lions? Edayan Daniel Malkamalala, at that point the king, Daniel responded to the king. Malkala almin chay, May the king live forever. Elohim shalach malachei. God has sent his angels, usagar pumar yavata v'lo chablun, and has sealed the mouths of these lions, they didn't bother me. Kol kabel dekadamoy zachu hishtakachatli, all in light of the fact that there was some small tzechut found in my favor, and therefore va'af kadamach malka chavula lo avdet, indeed taking into consideration the fact I didn't do a darn thing, I was totally innocent, and that was even as far as you're concerned. And because of that, I was saved from this. So then, Baden Malka Sagit Evaloi. At that point, the king indeed felt very, very good about things, and he decided, Amar Lahansaka Minguba, Daniel, Amar, he tells Daniel, well, why not come out of there? And so, if you sack Daniel Minguba, Daniel was lifted out of that dungeon, V'chol Chavaloj Takarbe, and there wasn't a mark on him. Deiman Belahe, because he was faithful and believed in his God. So, at that point, Vamar Malka, this is all Rumozim, we mentioned yesterday, the concept of the Aryeh. As a matter of fact, the Medrash says that even Yaakov Avinu, when he originally said, Gur Aryeh Yehuda, it was with the mind to be matzo, those of Yehuda, and this was the Aryeh of Yehuda that was connected to the Aryeh of Bovel, so that the way the Medrash puts it is the Arayot saw him as being a lion. So they're going to bother another lion. And so indeed, Malach comes and announces to the lions, meet your cousin. Here's another lion. A lion that stands for the Malchut. We'll talk about this in more conceptual terms when we complete it. And it stands for the Malchut Yehudah. And because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was also Nidma to, it says, Hashem Kariyeh Yishag, Achri Hashem Yelechu, Kariyeh Yishag. And so that this HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends now the schus of the Gur Aryeh Yehudah as an Aryeh to be matzal from an Aryeh against the Aryeh of the Bavel. So this is all Rumozim over here of the Arayot. And then so the king thought this was a good time to perhaps take a little revenge. I mean, after all, he had been trapped in this ridiculous position of needing to take the very guy that he thought was the one he was going to put in charge of all of the others, and they entrapped him to be stuck with the laws of Paras Madai, or Madai or Paras at the time. And so he figures, why don't we call them over? So he brings over these guys. These were the guys that, remember those beautiful words, that expression in Aramaic, the guys who ate the winks, in other words, they had the cocktail parties that had arranged all of this. It's the kind of place where you eat while you're winking, and that's when all of these plots are laid. That's a great achalu katsoy. They ate the winks of Daniel, and they had arranged this whole plot, the Lagovar Yavata Romo. And so the Medrash says, well, he says to them, well, what do you say now? What's the big deal? Obviously, first of all, you're on his side. Probably they were well fed beforehand. Not to mention the fact that Daniel has probably been taken care of. He gave them food, and they got to recognize him, and so he was basically their trainer as far as they were concerned. So Daryovi says, okay, I got a good idea. Why don't you do the same thing? Here, we'll give you food. You give these lions as much food as you like. So they're all giving the lions food. And then he says, okay, now we'll throw them in together with their kids and their wives. Let's just throw them all in, all 120 of the governors and so on. After all, I mean, nothing's going to happen to them. So the Medrash measures like over 360 people altogether are dumped into this Govar Rayot. And so he throws them, Ramo Inon, Benayan, Onosheam, but they never made it to the bottom of the Govar Rayot because while they were still in midair, Lomatul Arid Guba, Adishalito Bon Ariavata, until before they were grabbed by these lions in midair, v'chol garmeon hadiku, who managed to crush their bones before they got to the bottom. Medayin Daryavesh Malka ketav l'chol ha'mamaya. And at that point, Daryavesh wrote his letter to all of the nations, umaya, nationalities, v'lishinaya, and to the various tongues, the dayanin b'chol ara, that live across the earth, shlom chon yizgei, may you have great peace. Min kodamai sim te'im, and from in front of me, I hereby issue a decree, d'b'chol shotan malchuti, in all places where I rule, and the imperium is recognized, lahon zayin v'dachalin min kodam al-ade Daniel. All must have respect and awe for the Lord of Daniel, the hu alaha chaya, as opposed to all of these images and so on, he is the living God, kayam le'omin, as opposed to the stars and the sun and the other things that people worship, he is eternal. Umalchutei delot itchabal, his malchut, there's nothing that could hurt it, v'shultanei ad sofa, and his power extends to the very ends of the universe. Mishayziv u'matzion, that's very interesting, because mishayziv really means u'matzion, except one is Aramaic and one is Hebrew, but it ought to be the same thing. So Chazal asks, what is the point indeed of saying Mishayziv u'matzion? So one is a reference to the Avot, and one is an effort of matzion to the Banim. The Aved Atin, as we see, this is a direct continuation, of course, of the, just as we had the Kipsha Na'esh, we had Avram Avinu, who was Nitzal, to get it again from all of his interactions with the Malchiot. So, Deshezev L'Daniel Minyad Arevata, this is the one who is Avid Atin, who does great signs, Vitimin and wonders, Vishamayu V'ara on heaven and on earth, Deshezev L'Daniel Minyad Arevata, who has saved Daniel from the lions. Now that's the end of Daryavish's words. V'Daniel Dina Hatzlach B'Malchut Daryavish. And this Daniel now was successful throughout the period of Daryavish, and continued to serve Ubimalchut Koresh Parsaya, and during the time of Koresh, who we said was his son-in-law, who was the Parsian. In fact, remember that there were those Shitas who learned that Koresh Parsaya is actually all the way to the end, in other words, the second Koresh, not Koresh the Great, but that he continued on through Daryavish. I'll say that these names, Daryavish and Koresh, are the same names. So that the second Daryavish is also called Koresh, also called Artaxata. So in other words, a lot of these names, which are very confusing in terms of finding the historical points of all of these people, that's because the names were official names. They weren't really personal names. So you have the Artaxerxes, and then the Artaxata, the Achashverishes. There's quite a few of them. There's Achashverishes, Koreshes, and Daryavish throughout. So at this point, as we mentioned yesterday, the Daryavish, the father-in-law, was from Madai, and there was still this sense of respect for Madai that Koresh had, and when he died, and the Koresh took his place. So what we've seen over here really is the beginning of the transition. And in fact, these are closing words. Daniel, Dana, these are the closing words of the book, in a sense, because as we mentioned, there's two parts to this book. There's the part of which in which there's the interaction of Daniel and Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah with what was going on at the time. And over there, Daniel is this Yosef figure, and Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah is this Yehuda, are these Yehuda figures. And both of them are contributing towards the transition of a Yisrael who was used to a Beit HaMikdash, used to Avodat Korbanot, used to Asar Nisim B'chol Yom, used to a completely different modality of what it meant to be a Ben Yisrael. And in fact, we saw that Chazal considered that modality to be very primitive, and that we really see the period here as the dawn, not the night. So even though we're going to see that Daniel refers to his own sense of what he's going through as nighttime, and he's lost, and he's in the dark, and he doesn't understand what's happening, the truth is that all transitions are like that. And this one is really, we see as the beginning of the dawn. So that's Ayelat HaShacha, as the Gemara says. That's why the period of Esther, and Esther herself, in a sense, is merumezet as Ayelat HaShacha, because of the fact that the Beit HaMikdash was no longer seen as a magical creation, was no longer seen as a purely religious kind of location where this was the only way to be in the presence of God. And you'll recall that it wasn't meant to be that way, initially. And you'll recall that as we learned in the idea that ultimately, I think we were talking on Tisha B'Av, ultimately, as the Navi says, people won't be talking about the Oren Hashem. As Rashi says, it'd be too much traffic to get to the Beit HaMikdash anyway. Who would bother going there? You gotta be crazy. Well, you're going to sit in traffic for 3 days to get to the Beit HaMikdash? For what? The Radak says this also. The systems there are not really meant to focus on the Beit HaMikdash, except where somebody mamish has to be there, in terms of mitzvah satayra. But as far as there being a religious center, it becomes more and more decentralized. And this begins here in this story, this last piece of Daniel, with the tefillot. That's what is an ending here. This is the end of the interaction in which Daniel actually serves governmental functions, as do Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. They're busy. Second part of the book begins a completely different transition. And that part of the book is fascinating. I'm going to begin it today. But the central point of the second section is the vision of Geulah. Now, what's interesting is there never really was much concern for that idea before. Even more interesting is that the basis of that concern, really in the Torah, is Bilam. In other words, the only time that we have these eschatological kind of visions and the sense of what is coming and the grandeur of the Golos to be, and mention of Dorach Kochav Miyakov, the sense that there's going to be a future which is entirely different as an actual Nevius that is said in these mystical terms, is a non-Jew. Interestingly enough, it's exactly what happens here. In other words, at the beginning, the dreams of Nebuchadnezzar are exactly in the same fashion. They're the dreams of a non-Jew that becomes now interpreted as meaning some of the things that Bilam meant. That's very strange. So that right now, as we begin the coming back, the visions of coming back there to Israel, as the Gemara says, Daniel was feeling very, very disturbed by the fact that the 70 years of Bavel never seemed to end at the 70 years. Whatever Cheshbonot he made didn't seem to work any better than Belshazzar himself had thought that they were going to work, and of course they didn't, and he couldn't understand what was going on. So there was a heightened concern for what is going on, what is happening. And it's interesting because to us, looking backwards, the vision, the perspective, the historical perspective is very, very different. We are used to the idea that Am Yisrael is very much part of the world and that the almost basal relationship of Yisrael to the world is galut, not living in Eretz Yisrael. I mean, at that time, to have told someone that the nation is destined to survive 2,000 years, it's just absolutely crazy. It's simply mind-boggling to such an extent they would have thrown up their hands and given up. Even at the time of the Churban, we know that in Yecheskel, there were really two violently different reactions. One reaction we spoke about earlier, look, you know, a guy throws his wife out. I mean, that's it. You know, what's he coming talking to us about? Mitzvahs, about futures. There's no mitzvahs, there's no futures, there's no nothing. And we have all of that interaction in which Yecheskel tells him, listen, that's ridiculous. And, you know, hayolo tiye, you're not going to be ever like the goyim. Reza get kritucho, shalachti imchem. There never was a get. I don't know what you're talking about. But that was their feelings. But there's nothing to do anymore. The other was this extreme reaction that we find at the time of the Romans as well, with the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni, in which there was the feeling of violent reaction against the goyim. So you have the kanoim, you have the rebellions, the bar kochba over here, you have the asher mishio chayz v'rapetz tol alayach alasala. You know, we're just waiting to get our revenge on Bavel, and that's what it's all about. And we're not going to sing Shir Hashem about Matnichar. This is the, you know, it becomes now the songs that have been the popular song even right there about the experience of being in Bavel. None of that is seen in Daniel at all. And yet this is the Daniel that is the vision of the future. So here you have the Sefer in which we don't find any kind of problem in dealing with Bavel. On the contrary, the leading citizens, we understand, should be Jews. The leading members of the government should be Jews. The interaction, whether it was if it was government programs, should be involving Jews. The idea of Nebuchadnezzar opening up the Otzarot, the support that was given, the coming of the Charash and Masger to provide for the whole infrastructure that was going to be the type of thing that took place. If anything, I mean, we find very, very much the model of the original Galut, which is the Galut Mitzrayim. We're over there. This is what Yosef was trying to succeed at. It was exactly what Yehuda was trying not to succeed at. And these were the issues that came to the fore right then, and they're involved here as well. But the new ideas that Yisrael, for the first time, gets the sense of the ups and downs of history as being central to the development of Yisrael. And this is a brand new idea. Because it used to be that we looked at Galut, and this is certainly the way that Yecheskel, the people in Yecheskel saw it, we look at Galut as the punishment and the end. The idea to expand the nature of Galut into the vision of what Maaseh Bereishit is, and I'm just going back now, not just to this personal story of Yisrael in terms of how Avram Avinu saw it with the Emach, Hashecha, Gedolah, Nofelet, but as we've seen so many times, the opening Sukkim of Bereishit, which is pre-humanity, as being defined as conceptual elements of Bria. That include Tohu, Vavohu, and Choshech, Tahom, the idea of Rechifa, the Ruach Elokim. Obviously, these are not meant as direct implications to issues that are childishly meaningless in terms of any type of cosmic vision of who the heck cares the name of the king of some crummy little place on a crummy little planet in a crummy little solar system in a crummy little galaxy stuck away somewhere in an infinity of multiverses. I mean, it's unimportant. So that is what you're talking about in the opening of Bereishit is a vision of the development of life, awareness, intelligence, and the super development, which we understand is the nature of Malchus Mashiach. So that means that the description of the organic process that ends up being this Bereshit, which is a vision of the future, in the process of Reshit, in other words, the beginning of something that is meant to achieve, find its own way, we needed to come to understand that that process involves, by definition, something that is much more than a local event in which these group of nomads become a nation and they create their own particular cult in their own little country and they have built a temple and wow, really exciting stuff. We come to understand for the first time here that there are certain concepts that keep reoccurring again and again, and they will show up on any level of description of the way things need to ultimately become. And that's why wherever you find a sense, because I'll identify, here is a moment in which there are intimations of a future. So, for instance, obviously, Mice Bereshis, but that's a given. But where you talk about the Parah Aduma, so the Parah Aduma is the idea of mortality, the solution to evil. Okay, so obviously this is a place which we need to also find that same development. So you'll find these weird midrashim. The Suah of Yaakov. What is the Suah of Yaakov? Malchel Olim V'Yordim. Aha. So Olim V'Yordim is basically some type of process with, as you'd say in English, ups and downs. But that's very much the process that described in Mice Bereshis of ups and downs, which you're going to go through these periods, or the ups and downs that are mentioned to Avram Avinu. I don't mean to be mezalzel chasrom, ups and downs, but in other words, by definition, what it means is that in any type of self-organizing process, then by definition, you have to have ups and downs, because that's the only way in which things self-organize. So heuristic processes are always curves, really. And that means that there's going to be periods, maybe vast periods, in which things appear to be completely and totally lost. And then in the perspective of hundreds of years in the future, you come to recognize that those periods were the most productive, the most important, most paradigm-changing, while during the time that it's going on, people are just completely confused. It doesn't seem to be going anywhere, doing anything, serving any purpose, except making things worse and worse and worse. And indeed, from the perspective of a human being living in the 21st century, the clear-cut development that have occurred in human development are so awesome, so astounding in a sense. And it isn't so that they're merely technological developments and results of improved lifestyles and so on. They're completely different visions of the value of human life, the value of an individual, the meaning of freedom, the potential, ultimately, of solving issues, perhaps indeed looking at it from a purely mechanical point of view, but solving the problems of a planet in trouble. These are issues that once upon a time you found only in the most, what people thought were outlandish midrashim, in which they spoke about these issues of the dangers to the planet, the ability to be mitaken, the things that could happen. And then, as we've said, little children, kindergarten children, are aware of, almost from their mother's milk, of things that people wouldn't have even dreamt of a mere 100 years ago. Mikolshe came 500 years ago. So those types of developments, ultimately, are developments not simply, we tend to view them from inside as sort of external issues, but they're not external issues. They're part of a development that is a grand mental development. Because, again, it's not coincidental either that the amazing and exponential growth in terms of understanding, of penetrating into what it is that lies beneath the structures that we see of complexity in the world, the interactions that people have that were never had before, that entire societies can share, in which the visions of the Nebuchadnezzar, which at the time they say, yeah, okay, so the feet is made out of dirt. The recognition of how much that is true, that the feet of Malchus is made out of dirt, and that what we call grassroots, I mean, the grassroots, is totally this picture, that everything is coming from grassroots. I mean, that now home computers are harnessed together in order to discover pulsars. And I mean, it's just crazy things in which the entire planet acts together almost as a superhuman to be able to see things that no particular human could see. Those are the expressions of Malchus. Obviously, we see only the beginnings of it, because it's still within that biological realm of the competitiveness, which indeed then he points out, which comes out immediately in the opening of the next parak. Of course, it's all still childish, because it's all still driven by very childish biological drives, because people have not been able to really see sufficiently a perspective that allows them to get beyond it, to become fully human. And that full humanity, that is meant for the Malchus Atida. So what happens here, that in getting away from the early visions of even Shlomo HaMelech, in which you could make this happen, in which you could give people education, you could bring the earth into Yerushalayim. So we have that vision of Malachim about the ships coming in and bringing in the most crazy birds and animals for zoological gardens and the different kind of metals and astounding riches and literature, civilization, and so on and so forth. In our vision, it's primitive. And yet at the time, it's impossible to conceive that this is primitive. It looks cutting edge, as everything always does when it is the cutting edge. The difference is whether you're willing to acknowledge that the cutting edge will look primitive next year. And that is something that's very, very new. That is the concept that whatever we view as emet is merely another little tiny piece of what continues to grow into things that are inconceivable in advance until they actually are given to you to see. That is very, very much a new idea. When did Yisrael begin? When did it embark on this journey? The journey without end, in a sense, at this moment, was only with the visions, and this is what the Neil now attempts to do, having established that it is possible not only to survive, not only to flourish in terms of economics and in terms of social stature and the covet that one could have for the Jewish tradition, but that it's also possible to find entirely new modalities of what it means to be an Eved Hashem, in which the Beis HaMikdash plays no role, in which we understand that karbonis, in a sense, are primitive, because they address primitive needs that need to be, and for the first time are forced upon you, that need to be bent towards tefillah, awareness, taking upon yourself 3 times a day to understand where you're going, to have a perspective, to look, and to be aware of what the nature of tefillah means to the world. And remember, going back to my Bereishis, tefillah was where it began, not karbonis. Adam HaRishon's position in the world was defined as the position of human awareness. Lo haya mi sheyakir betovatan shel geshamim, bavdat shem tzorach habriot ulitpalel aleihem. That awareness, that connectedness of human understanding to where it was that the earth needed to go and where it came from, that was what gave it its chiyus. And that's the Ima Melech b'Melachto Yashvu Sham. That is what allowed creation to proceed. It's like, again, there's no past and future when it comes to real physics. I mean, time is really not important in quantum physics at all. Nor is it in terms of understanding what Ma'aseh Bereishis means, where it's going, and what was necessary for it to achieve its first moments. But we're now coming for the first time to see that. Obviously, it has to be couched in very primitive language, because that's all that's available. So as Chazal tells Divra Torah Kelashon Bnei Adam, in exactly the same way that the story of Gan Eden is very primitive in the sense of its mythological simplicity, and it's meant to be mythically simple. Nonetheless, we understand the roots of so many different issues that are openly and clearly discussed there about the nature of evil, the meaning of sexuality, the burying of drives, the understanding of how these interrelationships become now fundamental for not only populating the earth, but learning to grow in it, the increase of the gene pool potential. A lot of different things that took thousands of years to work out. But what are those primitive terms really referring to? The same thing is true when we go to Yecheskel, we talk about a vision of a Merkava and so on. What are you going to tell people about a Merkava? That it had four-wheel drive. I mean, it's a completely different vision. So in terms of Yecheskel, yes, you have the Malach is wearing a slide rule behind his ear. And you think that if it wasn't a vision that was more advanced, he'd be wearing an iPad in his ear. What's the difference? In other words, all of these things are childish. They're simply talking to people in modalities that touch them on some very simple way that they could translate it to being meaningful for them. That is essential to understand in the Prokem that are coming. Because to us, they're primitive, just like the dreams of Nebuchadnezzar are primitive. But switch them, take away their primitivity. Talk about the head of gold on this giant statue as meaning what gold means, what it meant to them, the idea of eternal life, the idea of a metal that could never be lost on the earth, a metal that was incorruptible, wouldn't really bind to anything else, that a very low temperature wouldn't simply bring it back out again. That idea of being at the top of a pyramid, being able to control things from top down, buying your way through to whatever it is necessary to do, so on and so forth. So what we've already seen is the dramatic change from a head of Zahav going down now to a body that was bound not by central control, like a brain, but rather where the body was more important than the brain. This is Madayaparas. More important because law was more important than leadership, There was no longer Shilton. The guy on top was bound by the laws of the country. And this is the first step down away from the Memshala idea, the controlling idea. Opened up the doorway to the next stage, which of course is the Book of Esther, which Daniel is also very involved, in which everything revolved around politics and populism and the need to attract the democratic majority and so on. These are amazing changes. And they're changes, again, maybe to someone at the time of Daniel. They were just political changes. They were just social changes. We have the perspective to see them as much more profound than that, because they are changes that are expressive of deep conceptual roots about the nature of complexity itself, about where and how things develop. And therefore, as I say, so Chazal looked to all of these locations. I mean, wherever Avraham Avinu is given his vision, so we say, take an Eglah Meshuleshet. Oh, the Eglah Meshuleshet is Babel, because it was three Malachim. That's Nebuchadnezzar, Vomrudar, Baal Shatzar. Take an Eiz Meshulash. That must be Mordai, Koresh, Dayovesh, Achashverosh, Ayel Meshulash. I'm not going to go through all that. We do it there. We do it by Yaakov Sulam. Olev Yori, Babel. The Tsar of Babel is Olev Shivim Yoredes. Mordai, Chamishim Mishnayim Yoredes. Yavan, Me'avishmonim Yoredes. Edom just keeps going. Terrifies Yaakov Avinu. Same thing happens over here. But the Tov of the Pora. Pora Zumitzrayim, Egla Yefefiah. Pora Aduma. Aduma is Babel. Antoresha de Dahava. Tamima is Mordai. Okay, again, I'm just trying to show you what it is that every single vision of development comes back to. And again, there's many subsystems within all of this. In other words, the idea of Arba Malchios are tied in Kabbalah to what are called the Shiva Malachi Kadmoim, which are Marumas in the Sedras to come, in which there's a whole list of Malachim Malchi, and we have no idea who these guys are. Barry Goldwater shows up there, May Zahav, I mean, it's really strange, and things like that. Absolutely crazy. But these are representative of the stages of the development of Malchut, broken up more. We have the Midas in Kabbalah that are meant to describe now the way in which complexity emerges from very simple roots, and it's nested each time within itself and so on. So, yeah, these are mechanisms. We're going to discuss them tomorrow, again, in primitive terms, and obviously it led to very primitive types of reading the Neil, so that what everybody would do is immediately take out their history books. Well, let's see, what would this be, and how many years would that be, and then when is Mashiach coming? You know, which is all that it meant. And which, of course, the book itself says, no information here. Don't bother looking. Because Daniel Sitom Advarim, nobody's supposed to understand anything practical out of this. So they're not meant to understand what's the point. The point is the structural consideration. The elements that are taken out of it so that people can ultimately, even if you're primitive, at least understand that there's a sense of where things are heading. And they're not just political. And they're not Nostradamus. In other words, we don't really care about when, what, and where. That's the Chazal tells Tipach HaTzvaseh of the Chashvei Kitzim. We're not interested in this. Or as the Rambam says, what possible interest could anybody have in knowing something that anyway doesn't make any sense? You know, whatever will happen, will happen. Then you'll be able to figure out backwards if you enjoy that kind of sense. Well, what type of remnants were for what? Who cares? This is nothing that gives a person Yirat Shamayim. It's nothing that gives a person understanding. It's nothing that gives a person intelligence. It doesn't increase your value as a human being. Why are you interested in it? It's just childish. And that's absolutely true. You always know the kind of people that are going to be talking about when it is that Mashiach is coming. They all share that same sense of, I don't want to do anything in the world. It's really nothing. There's nothing much that it means to me. But if Mashiach comes, it'll be okay. That's exactly the opposite of what the Sefer is meant to give us. So Bezrat Hashem, I thought we'd actually be with Bezrat Hashem, we'll start tomorrow in the second part of the book and see how very different it is from the first, although it begins in Aramaic, which we have to discuss why. And Bezrat Hashem, okay, we'll do that tomorrow too.